Stephen Wintons and Boris Mann discuss what's new in Drupal 6 at the April 26, 2007 meeting of the Vancouver League of Drupaleers.
Drupal 6?
Drupal 6.
Drupal 6. Okay, so I'll be honest, I had no clue I was supposed to say something. I thought Boris was joking.
He always is joking.
Yeah, pretty much. Drupal 6 has no fixed release date to start with. We do have a date for what is called a code freeze, which is June 1st, if I'm right. What that means is no more features will be added to the Drupal core from that point on until it's been tested and until the final release, basically. And during the code freeze, we generally have a couple of beta releases. And then when it's stable enough, we do release candidates. And then when nobody complains about those or not enough people complain about those, we slap a sticker on it that says final and release it onto the world.
So using those metrics, I mean, we can learn from past experiences. The past cycle was about 9 months long. So using that, if there's a freeze in mid-June, then you could see a release sometime around mid-September, right before the next DrupalCon, which will give people a chance to, of course, talk about Drupal 7.
That's likely. And of course, we're only in the middle of a release cycle, so not everything that will be in a final Drupal site has been coded even yet, or has been proposed yet, because...
What kind of module rate are we going to see between...
As much as is necessary. The Drupal policy on backwards compatibility is that we provide an upgrade path for your data, so your website never changes, never breaks. But as far as actual API compatibility, we have no guarantees. We do have, for every release, a list of the changes that we make in terms of API changes with before and after examples. I think the URL is drupal.org/update/modules, or module, maybe, one of those. And yeah, that's where you can learn about how to keep your modules in sync. But Drupal will never avoid breaking a certain API convention or a certain mechanism just to maintain backwards compatibility if the new solution is much more superior, and which is what we're doing. Perfect example, one of the first things I can talk about, Drupal 6 has completely changed the way menus work on the back end. And Drupal uses menu systems for more than just displaying navigation. It uses it to handle callbacks and dispatching stuff to the right module and all those things. So it's a very critical piece of functionality. That's one thing which one person in particular, CHX, Karoli Nigeshi, he did the bulk of the work, rewrote the menu system. It's much faster, much better. Breaks every module that uses the menu system, which is pretty much every module out there. But it's a lot faster, it's a lot better, cleaner, and so it's a good thing. And any custom menu items you have, for example, will keep working.
So I was going to say, it's something that comes up a lot. And in fact, there's a great little thread on Drupal.org that is entitled "The Developers Must Be Stopped." And it's a long, long discussion about the pros and cons of Drupal's policies around APIs and whether some magical set of people should spend an entire cycle just updating handbooks or something like that. I participated a fair bit in it. It's fairly heated in both directions. The two outcomes, you don't have to upgrade. Like, no one ever has to upgrade unless there's a really good reason to. And then you balance those reasons against possibly the minus reasons of having to either port modules yourself or update them. And generally, the work that needs to be done to port your modules compared to the amount of stuff that you get with a new Drupal release is usually a pretty damn good trade-off. But the main thing is, if your site works for you, you don't have to upgrade. You have to manage client expectations when they see a shiny new version come out.
Well, I don't tell them about it.
There you go.
Exactly. What kind of a time frame do you just see for large number of modules being updated?
You know what? I mean, an interesting thing is as for instance, as CCK really came into its own and started being really solid, a lot of modules just, people said, well, forget it. This functionality is duplicated by CCK, so, it's no longer going to be maintenance. It's fairly easy to migrate. So, here's how you migrate, sort of thing. But it's completely up in the air because there's sort of this set of modules that are known to work really well and have really great maintainers, and they tend to keep up pretty closely and actually develop and test on the head versions, and there's others that aren't.
What about the security bogeyman? I mean, the
that's different.
And the system's constantly being, and the web servers themselves need to be patched all the time.
There's a big difference, though. We have two kinds of releases. One is the releases that have new features, which is the one that break backwards compatibility. And the other is security and maintenance updates, which never break backwards compatibility and never include new features.
So they only extend back two versions, right?
Yeah. In practice is how many years?
Let's look at my map here. So we're here today, and 4.6 is now, it still actually has a maintainer assigned. Am I right on that? No.
No.
So 5 and 4.7 are now supported. Right. And this came out early 2005, right? So 2 years.
So you really are forced to move at pretty much 2 years.
No, you're not. You have many other options, right? For example, you could step up and maintain your own security and gather together with lots of other people on that side. You laugh, but that's what's being done by the community now for the versions, right? So if you have a big enough business reason to do that, you could absolutely do that, right? And it's this subtle thing of
pull tension.
Yeah.
And roll up your sleeves.
Yeah.
If it was something you rolled your own, you wouldn't be getting security patches anyway.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So
you'd be writing them anyways if it's proprietary software.
Yep.
Believe me, I know all about it. I worked for 13 years in Nortel. They forked four different versions of the same code. 4 years later, they're maintaining it. It would have been easier for them just to maintain. It would have been harder politically, but it would have been easier for them to have upgraded each of the streams. It would have been painful, but in the long run, it would have saved them millions of dollars. And you're probably looking at the same thing with your clients. If you have a significant client base, you're probably saving yourself millions of dollars over the long run if you bite the bullet and after a judicious period of time, with a suitable assessment, you actually got there.
An interesting phrase that I heard someone use recently, and I just say that because I totally don't remember who told it to me first, was that CMS is a process, not a project, right? Deploying a static website, you know, websites in general, like today there's the expectation that they're not done when you launch them. The design might be done until 2 years later when you want to do a brand refresh or something like that. But in terms of content and everything else, yeah.
There were a lot of examples at the OSCMS about larger companies with big websites running on 4.5 and 4.6. So they are either maintaining them themselves or they're not running into very much trouble. You know, an example was Savannah Now. They're still on like a custom 4.6 head version. I only give you it was even the final version. And so there's, you know, they're able to use it and get, you know, hundreds of thousands of visitors and but it has modules in it that they develop that they need and they can't move up. So you know, there are people still that stay on the old versions.
I think in general with open source, you can see more and more business models. Spike Source is one example, someone that we work with who are like offering these packages of maintaining it and other things like that. And you run a services company and you probably start working on, and here's the 6-month contract, right? Right? And that's just various people's kind of desire to it's like buying insurance in some ways, right? Except you actually are getting something for it.
But I mean, in the case of the client, you know, one of the dead bodies in the room is the webmaster. You know, he's gone.
Yeah.
That skill, to the extent that that was the one of their jobs, was to maintain the security of their systems, and to maintain all the fuzziness around like running a website, which is not just, you know, the content side; it's all the infrastructure and the version numbers of the OSs and the web servers and those things. So that's that all that interaction that ends up being a much bigger headache than just running, you know, the Drupal side.
Yeah, I think another interesting phrase is that Drupal is free, but it's not necessarily cheap.
Right.
Keep going.
Okay. One thing that a lot of people will probably care about is the theme system improvements. If you know Drupal theming, you know that with PHP template until now, whenever you want to do something that isn't the basic page block comment kind of theming, you know, you want to change this little button somewhere in the administration section, you always had to dig through a lot of code and, you know, make a little function stub somewhere, complicated process. Earl Miles, Merlin of Chaos, has been doing some tremendous work on this and has pretty much implemented what is called the theme registry, which is a centralized way so that both modules and themes can directly use templates without having to do any specific code for enabling a certain template. So if you have a theme and you want to override a very specific theme function, for example, the placeholder theming, which controls how little pieces of user-submitted content, like, are you sure you want to delete this blog, for example, then blog would be a placeholder because it's kind of an emphasis string. To theme that, you used to have to create a whole PHP template placeholder function, do complicated stuff. Now you just drop a file in your theme directory, and it gets picked up. It pretty much just works. You can even have a mix of the two within the same theme, so it's completely backwards compatible. But it's pretty decent. We also have info files for themes, which means that stuff like themes, for one, can have a pretty name, pretty description, so it doesn't have to be lowercase and file name. But, you know, we use it for theme features, for example. Does this theme support a search box? Does this theme support a secondary navigation? These are things which used to be defined in code and are now defined in a much simpler text file. Again, make theming friendlier to themers and take away all the scary coding stuff that they still have to do now with Drupal 5. I think for theming, what else did we change, or are we changing? See, I don't have a good view of everything that's going on with Drupal either. Well, other stuff in core, we have a new language subsystem, which is part of the internationalization work that's going on. For example, it has better support and built-in support for language properties like right to left, which is very important for contributed modules that build upon this, because you need, for example, Arabic or Hebrew, has to have some specific accommodations for that. Drupal core itself, again, doesn't have any actual right-to-left script support. It doesn't, for example, automatically mirror design, which is very difficult to do generically, but it has some infrastructure for that. We support now browser-based language detection, like Google does. If I go to Google, for example, I see Google in Dutch, because that's what my computer is set up to do, but I guess pretty much anyone in this room would use an English operating system and would see English Google. That's something you can do with Drupal core now as well. Language codes in the URL are supported as well. So you can have mysite.com/en for your English content, mysite.com/fr for your French content. But again, you need the contributed internationalization package at the moment. I'm looking at Boris because I'm not entirely sure either.
Basically, there's a handful of modules that Drupal's basic, certainly localization, enabling to have the interface in a foreign language. And of course, with Steven's UTF-8 work throughout the years, it's always been great for Chinese and Japanese and pretty much any language. But now a lot of that is moving to actually into the core of Drupal. So to truly support out-of-the-box localization and internationalization of websites, what I have up here is a Drupal Hebrew installation profile, which does a bunch of extra work and bundles code out of the box. But theoretically, you know, it's a ways away still. Potentially, we could offer localized downloads of, at the very least, core Drupal directly from Drupal.org with the release of Drupal 6, right? So that's kind of huge. Again, Drupal's been really good at this for a long time. Drupal 6 will be the first cycle where it's in core, so we'll see lots of activity happen then.
I'm not sure the big difference, though, is whether it's just about localization, that is, changing your website, for example, to be in French instead of English, or having an actual multilingual website. And for most of the multilingual stuff, you still need the internationalization packages. But again, like CCK, that stuff is moving slowly into core. So this stuff like language detection based on the browser used to be in the internationalization module and is now in core. So this is sort of the stuff that's happening. I think for the actual things that have been done to Drupal core other than that are pretty small at the moment.
Well, there's the logging one.
Oh yeah, database log, which should probably be added to the change log.
So this is, I'm going to highlight this. There's it's something that's now made it for sure into Drupal 6, and I have a little project going to fund a backport for Drupal 5. Essentially, what's happened is the watchdog module on very high traffic sites, it was all logged to the database, and it made the database huge and slowed down performance a lot and a bunch of other things. So that's been abstracted out, so you can log to different things. You can log to a system level syslog. You can and a bunch of other possibilities, like, you know, get an email every time you have a critical error on in the log. So it's a very, very, very interesting set of functionality, especially for high performance sites. And it's just another layer of sort of abstraction. Why say that we have to log to the database? You can now swap that out with your option of a couple different modules. So if that something is of interest to you, then say you're running, you know, a high performance, you know, local independent newspaper or something like that, you might want to throw a couple bucks in the donation pool for that one. And that's in the high performance group on groups.drupal.org.
Really specific performance-related changes in 6?
Files, caching. There's other stuff sort of in the queue.
Yes, there's some stuff in the queue.
Object caching? Anything
with
queue.
What? I can just look at the queue. What do we have in here?
Did you say installation profiles would be part of the core in 6?
No, they're in core in 5.
Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things that was talked about was potentially someone has to step up and do it, and it vaguely has my name next to little bits of it, is to ship with more than one install profile. I'll talk about some of that stuff when I talk about my install profile stuff. But no, they work today.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's small performance improvements in the pipeline. It's just, you know, somebody notices that X is kind of slow and could be better if we replace it with Y. I don't think there are any other major architectural improvements that we've decided, at least, that are definitely going to go in.
It's fairly early in the cycle. What I've noticed is people seem to be a lot more organized and are kind of cooperating together to really focus on a couple of different areas. So I think we'll see some more interesting stuff around jQuery and JavaScript stuff.
Oh, we've got some... some cool jQuery stuff in core.
Yeah. Can you demo something?
Can you access my local machine from... Yeah. I guess I'll walk over there.
Here, here. Just ping me. Can I access your local host?
No, it's not set up to be accessed over
Fine.
That domain name.
You know what? Again, they were at OSCMS.
Six of them. Excellent.
Good marketing, though. Good marketing.
And ride the North American Security Gauntlet. In Europe, probably.
Pretty much. I mean, again, the Drupal looks at stuff that's going in Joomla, and there's this kind of, like, there is sort of a friendly rivalry sort of thing. But at the same time, you know, there's folks who use Drupal, there's folks who use Drupal, there's people who pick it for different reasons, you know. Making a really static website with lots of static content management is a pain in the ass in Drupal for some things, whereas Joomla is kind of, you know, customized for it. Some of the Joomla folks created a Drupal site called, I think it's opensourcecommunity.org, to talk more generally about some of these things. Ooh, slick.
I forgot about this, yeah. This is what the new installer looks like. So it uses the same Garland theme that we use by default, and it has a little overview of the tasks that it's going to do on the left-hand side here, which are completed because I just wanted to refresh this instance. And yeah, okay. So Drupal 5, Drupal 6, sorry. If you go to edit something and it loads, hopefully faster than this. Yeah. So you can go type in something in your title. And before Drupal 6, if you wanted to have a shortened version of your post on the front page, for example, you type some stuff, and then you type this really ugly break tag, which, in case people can't see at the back, looks like this. Really horrible.
Yeah.
And then you type whatever your full content was going to be. That's not very nice. So where's my text mate? Let's Get some text in from the... What's wrong with that? It's clunky. Normal people don't remember that exclamation mark, dash, dash, break, dash, dash. So, yeah, you've typed some stuff in your post, and you want to have a separate... you want to mark the place where it should be split, then you click the little button, and it does this. So you get two separate text areas. You can do whatever you want. The nifty part is that we added, I'm not sure if you know, excerpt module. It was a module, very small, I started it, which let you have a completely separate teaser. So the default behavior of Drupal is that the teaser is just a chopped up version of your full text, so just like the first paragraph or something. This allows you to do a completely separate teaser if you uncheck this little box, and then this will be shown on the front page and this will be shown on the main view. And if back to the old behavior, then this will be shown on the front page, whereas the main view of your post will show both in the order they appear here. And if you want the old behavior where you auto-generate a teaser, you can join them back together like this.
The visual position of that bar is not the actual color point, though. It's just where the amount of text that's in that.
Yeah. No, it's two separate text areas now.
Right, but you know, if you drag that bar up,
it's
so you cover some of the text in the top.
It's not going to
do anything.
No.
So it's purely about, yeah, it's a marker, but you can't drag it inside the text, mostly because of technical limitations.
Yeah.
Because then you have to start acting like a real WYSIWYG text area, which has its own share of problems. So this was kind of like the lo-fi solution that a lot of people were happy with.
Can I set different input formats for each part?
No, you can't. Because that would not degrade for non-JavaScript users.
Damn it.
Yes, I know, I'm annoying. Other cool feature, which I can't actually show off yet because my watchdog is going to be empty, as you can see. So let's fill that up a little bit.
If TinyMCE
has its own draggable marker, which is what I kind of meant with the whole, you know, you have to go to WYSIWYG to have a more usable experience. So TinyMCE is just going to disable the core behavior and do its own stuff because it doesn't need two separate text areas.
The Drupal break plugin.
For TinyMCE, yeah.
Although that wouldn't let you do a separate excerpt. I imagine that TinyMCE will likely be modified to work with 6 in some different way.
Probably. Now I have some stuff in here. So the thing is that Drupal administration uses a lot of tables. And when you scroll down, you often lose track of where you are in that table. When you scroll down, the header of the table will tag along and scroll down with it. So you can actually see what belongs with
you know what the columns mean.
Oh, yeah. go to admin access.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one. Access control. Giant table of doom. Used to be nearly unusable.
Now it's only slightly unusable.
Yeah. So yeah.
Come on, round of applause. But with install profiles, you never have to touch this table, ever.
Yeah, right. Well,
never.
Assuming you don't have any local overrides. Yeah. You like the default behavior profile.
So yeah, that's tiny little shiny thing in Drupal 6. I'm not entirely sure if there's any other shiny stuff we can show off that wasn't in Drupal 5. No, I don't think so.
Can you say something about how the menu system improves?
It's a technical change.
He's a developer. Tell him that crazy array-munging phrase of doom.
Okay. Drupal 5 starts processing a page. One of the first thing it does is either build a gigantic array of every single menu item in any module that you run, or if you already have that array cached somewhere, it fetches a cached copy and unserializes it. On an average Drupal site, I've never looked at how big it gets, but it's got to be at least 100, 200 items, something like this. So that's not entirely efficient. In Drupal 6, we move all that into a database table and just fetch whatever we need.
like for a given page.
Yeah. So we only if you visit node /123, it will only look at menu paths that have node in them. There's a very nice handbook with very nice documentation that explains all the complex underpinnings that it has. CHX will love to talk your ears off about it. So, basically it's just a lot faster, a lot more efficient. Other than that, it doesn't do anything differently than before functionally. Like everything that was there, or pretty much everything that was there, is still here. So for end users, there's not much difference. And the technical reasons all kind of depend on how all the hooks interact. So,
although being in the database, you can theoretically do some more interesting things with it as well. Hand weaving.
It seems to improve the performance then.
Yeah, it's purely performance, and it's not aimed at all at, you know, introducing any sort of new functionality. You won't notice a difference, ideally.
Is that the single biggest performance improvement then, coming from that?
Probably, especially for cached pages, because the dealing with the menu system was one of, you know, large hurdles for serving a cached page, because you first need to figure out what the hell you're looking at. I think, or I could be completely talking crap. Yeah, look at bootstrap.inc for the answer. I'm not gonna make judgment on that.
All right.
I think that's pretty much it. I mean,
the book.
Okay, the
I
book.
I have one other question actually.
Want to talk about the book?
Before the book.
Can you comment on the whole Rasmus stone in the pond about only supporting PHP 5?
I meant to bring that up and talk about OSCMS.
Okay, the reality of PHP is that the majority of all PHP installs out there still use PHP 4, which is really bugging the PHP core developers off. Because, you know, they've done some really great stuff with PHP 5. They got PHP 6 coming out the door. It looks really cool. They finally got Unicode support in there, for example, which, you know, Drupal's only had for 4 years or something. But nobody can, like, none of the large open source projects like Drupal can use any of this stuff. Drupal currently supports 4.3.3 as the minimum PHP version, and if we raise that, people complain generally. And then we would love to use some of this new stuff, for example, XML parsing in PHP 5, we'd love to use that. But if we do, then we shut off a huge portion of our user base. And it's a chicken and egg problem, because, you know, you can only get people to upgrade to PHP 5 if there's a reason. You know, if there's software that they can only run on PHP 5. On the other hand, they're, you know, not going to run this software if they still have PHP 4 and they're stuck in that situation. So Rasmus basically said, challenged all the open source PHP projects, drop PHP 4 and see what happens. It's kind of, now is not the time.
You know, to lend to your thing about talking about the different levels of the OS and so on that are changing all the time. So a reality is that CentOS, which is an open source kind of supported version of Red Hat /Fedora that focuses on stable releases, is at 4.3.4 or something like that for PHP, right? Again, they don't upgrade either unless they have to. So very much chicken and egg. I think many of the Drupal developers have said thing, you know, that PHP is a large part of what's holding various things back in Drupal.
Would you say that PHP 4 is a large part of what's holding back?
Yeah, for sure. No, absolutely. PHP in general as a language, for starters, and then the actual version that we need, the lowest common denominator version that we have to work with.
Sure,
yeah.
But, you know, the last meeting that I was at here, everybody complained about ABC.
Yep. For instance, an APC is slated to be in the core of PHP for PHP 6.
Yeah.
Right?
It should be.
Absolutely, right? So it's not an easy thing. I think one of the things that was talked about was for contributed module developers to start saying, "Hey, guess what? For Drupal 6, you know, we're going to use the PHP 5 date library."
Yeah.
Right? And so if you want to use it, you know, you know, then
so
you.
Why would I, as a contributor for Drupal, use the PHP 5 Drupal 8 library if there's something Drupal API that depends
There isn't.
No.
There isn't. So it,
like,
it's
there's loads of stuff in PHP 5 you might want to use, and it's little stuff. And I've actually written a module. There's several modules now in Drupal Contrib that require PHP 5. But I don't know how many people are actually using it. The big issue for us, though, is that there's a scary statistic, at least for me scary, that the majority of people still use PHP 4. But I know from my own experience, there's a lot of PHP installations out there, which is a box sitting in some basement somewhere running some ancient version of PHP that people are forgetting. So I think the phone home information that we want to look at in Drupal and have it send more information, of course, with administrator permission, to Drupal.org so that we can get a good view of how many Drupal people are actually running PHP 4. Because I have a suspicion that it might be quite different from, for example, the general PHP statistics, given that Drupal itself is a little more different from, you know, the average PHP project, like, say.
We didn't completely horribly break when PHP 5 came out, other than putting a big message up that said, it probably kind of works and we're not really supporting it, but go ahead, it kind of runs.
Well, that was when PHP
Drupal
5 came out.
4.5, I think?
Something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, for the end user, the big annoyance, the big thing is that because we ensure that everything runs on PHP 4, they, unless they do custom development, have no reason to upgrade to PHP 5.
I guess like one strategy that you could do to work around it, or at least the contrib authors, if they want to use PHP 5 features to work around it, is to implement something that uses the PHP 5 and say curl. I want to use curl or JSON or something like that.
Well, yeah, people are doing that.
But you implement a stub that falls back to a PHP 4 implementation.
You can't always do that, though.
Well, for things like JSON parsing and decoding and encoding, you could probably do that. I've done that with your JSON library, and then I use the C library if it's there. And for curl, you could still use other ways of getting remote sites and things like that. And for simple XML, Simple XML is kind of broken anyway, so.
Well, it's got to be less broken than the XML stuff in PHP 4, though.
True, but the thing is, like, you know, a lot of code that I've seen that uses Simple XML tends to sanitize it back out into an array anyway. So you could, you know, you could switch parsers, but the thing that you, the strategy there is that if you have some functionality that uses PHP 5, if it's there, you're punishing people for using PHP 4 with slowness, as opposed to breakage.
But you're punishing yourself by having to write code twice, though.
Well, but that code probably exists for PHP 4.
Could be. It highly depends on the module itself.
So how many people in the room know what version of PHP they're running?
I know.
Okay,
that's
pretty good, kind of. Okay, so how many people
are
running
geeks.
PHP 4, the Drupal on PHP 4?
4.3, 4.4.
And how many people are running PHP 5?
Just switched.
Right? So that's pretty close to, and I could probably put my hand up for both as well. So it's 50-50.
Yeah. Your file size is faster than
But how many people are running 4 because they need to support, make sure their code works in 4?
Oh, yeah. That's okay. Next question. How many people are running 4 because they know stuff breaks in 5?
Or how many people are running 4 because they're on Red Hat Enterprise Linux?
Or CentOS.
Or they're on the old version of Debian Stable.
Yeah,
that's actually the reason Drupal required only PHP 4.1 for a very long time was Debian.
Yeah.
So I think the short answer is we'll adapt to what people want.
Yeah.
But there's no way we're going to drop off a huge segment of our user base. At the moment,
I'm just saying that
I know.
Transitions that you could make that would help out the PHP situation generally.
Well, it's a messy situation, and I think, you know, that this, it's as much up to the individual contributors as the core developers to decide what they want.
Yeah.
But back to the original question, you know, Rasmus said, "Won't Drupal drop PHP 4?" And the answer to that is completely no at the moment.
Yeah.
And maybe in a year it'll be a completely different situation.
Been lots of good discussion about it, though.
Yeah.
Lots of people have said,
it's going to happen. It's just a matter of time.
Oh, yeah.
There must be a lot of pressure, though, from the off-the-shelf hosting, all that cheap hosting system.
Pretty much none of them appear as part of the Drupal community, per se.
Right, so there's no pressure that they can exert.
They don't support anything.
Contribute modules.
They don't contribute patches. So the people who buy $7 a month hosting might get upset, but also there doesn't tend to be a lot of overlap between those people and those who actually contribute to Drupal.
Right. Well, the big ones want to try and host their sites on those.
Dreamhost supports them. They're a big one.
Which may, again, this is kind of Rasmus's argument that it may, in fact, doing things like that may actually drive adoption by web hosts of PHP 5, and it's the whole trickle-down effect all the way around, right? Which is at first. If Drupal were to say tomorrow, oh, by the way, PHP 5 only, you know, would it lose or gain market share? Would more or less web hosts support it, right? Maybe we'll play that experiment sometime.
Seven, I say.
Maybe not.
Awesome. Thank you, Stephen.
No problem.